Issues Etc. Reformation Week begins on October 24th. 5 days of Reformation-themed programs with some of your favorite guests. And here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Reformation Week bulletin insert. We have 4 different bulletin inserts, one for each time zone. Issues Etc. Reformation Week.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. When a businessman dies, you might read the obit in the Wall Street Journal and maybe the Washington Post and maybe something that's probably Forbes or someplace where business matters matter. But Steve Jobs died. He was a businessman, a very successful one at that. But people marked his passing as something more important, especially with almost a spiritual air. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the spirituality of Steve Jobs, Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Did Steve Jobs have essentially 2 spiritualities, 2 religions?
You know, the thing about this situation is that there's no way to answer that question, in part because he was so secretive. The other point, and I took this on both at Get Religion, also in my Scripps Howard's column this week, is the media is absolutely convinced that the whole style, simplicity, and minimalism that characterizes Steve Jobs' work at Apple, the whole look of the Mac, they're convinced that this had something to do with his identification with Buddhism, and specifically Zen Buddhism. And there are certain things in his life story that we can look at and say, yes, there's definitely he went after Buddhism. He was intrigued by Buddhism. The degree to which he practiced Buddhism, we simply don't have information there yet. We know a Zen Buddhist master performed his wedding. We know that the company he ran, Next Computers, the one he ran during his exile to a foreign land, you know, from Apple, we know that he named a Zen master as his spiritual advisor at that company. I mean, there are all these intriguing details, but in the end, you end up with the question that you just asked. When you think of Buddhism, you don't think of an extremely radical version of American individualism, do you? I mean, Buddhism is supposed to be about the collective, about an individual seeking mastery over self. But at the same time, Buddhist societies are not supposed to be about just simply following your heart, following your own ideas, and kind of a radical individualism. Yet that is when Jobs spoke about his ultimate beliefs, what you heard was this very American entrepreneur, radical individualist. Let me just read the last couple of columns, or the last couple of paragraphs of my column from the Scripps version that I think makes this point. Critics noted that Jobs was a relentless and abrasive perfectionist who left scores of battered psyches in his wake. Whatever the content of his faith, it seemed to have been a Buddhism that helped him find peace while walking barefoot through offices packed with wealthy workaholic capitalists. In his Stanford sermon, and of course this is the thing everybody was quoting, was when Jobs did the commencement speech in 2005 at Stanford. In his Stanford sermon, Jobs urged his young listeners to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. For Jobs, the bottom line was his own bottom line, even when death loomed on the horizon. His ultimate hope was that he alone knew what was right. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking, he concluded. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. they somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. Now, I read that in simply to try to answer your question. That doesn't sound very Buddhist in terms of the lack of individualism and the yielding of oneself. So who knows what Jobs actually was? I concluded in the name of my column that he was, more than anything else, the saint of the 1960s, you know, and all that went into that era of American life.
What do you mean by that, the saint of the 1960s?
Well, I mean, so you've got rock and roll, you've got drugs, you've got the sexual revolution, you've got looking for every form of religion as long as it's not Christian and morally limiting. You have all of that. And Jobs, I just listed a bunch of things in life that were most important to Steve Jobs. The irony of which is that in his own personal life, he achieved greatness, true greatness as an executive, right about the time that his own private life finally settled down, which is kind of ironic. But he was a man of the 60s, more than anything else. And he grew out of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But I think it's safe to say that that was the ultimate influence on him, more than a studied, practiced Buddhism, unless we get more information that shows otherwise.
Laying his Buddhism aside, let's talk about technology. I think it's fair to speculate that Steve Jobs understood that his technology was, for many, a religion, maybe a small R religion. Did the media note that with his passing?
Well, yeah, to some degree. I mean, you've had the phrase "the cult of Mac," but what the media did in many of the pieces for the first time was actually attach the content of his design and of his technology on his so-called Zen mentality. In the column, I noted that most of what Mac has done through the years comes in black and white, you know, and that the yin-yang quality and the incredible structural simplicity of his design, all of those white boxes with almost nothing on them except the product, that he was coming from somewhere in terms of his taste and his design. And I'm willing, more than willing, to say that the media proved that in his mind that had something to do with Buddhism and the East and being the opposite of kind of loud, tacky, abrasive America.
What other observations would you make about how the media has marked the death of Steve Jobs? I mean, I noted at the beginning that this is usually not the fanfare for a fallen king that we afford businessmen.
No, this guy was a cultural leader, not a business leader. I think it's important to remember that Jobs is probably the exact age of almost every major newspaper editor in America. And the degree to which journalists walk around living on their Macs simply cannot be underestimated. And I say that as a person whose immediate family probably owns 22 Mac devices. His products were brilliant, and they were great. The irony, though, is they were still consumer products, and you were supposed to buy the new one every year instead of just kind of bonding permanently with the one you have. And there's this really powerful contradiction between the man's consumer-driven, you got to have whatever's new approach to life, and this thing of simplicity, calmness, stillness that you associate with the practice of Buddhism. Doesn't that strike you as interesting?
Yeah, amazing, in fact. One thing I did notice, Terry, with a few minutes left to us, is the way that Steve Jobs presented himself, especially in his latter years, to the public was largely through the rollout of these products that would come out at least every year. And he would be the face. He would be the one who's teaching you how to use it even before you went out and feverishly bought it. You already knew how to use it. I noticed this. Recently, Mark Zuckerberg rolled out a new version of Facebook. He did it exactly the same way. He was little Steve Jobs in doing it. And when I was watching Zuckerberg make this presentation, Terry, I noticed something that I hadn't noticed before. If you turn down the sound, you could be watching any pastor of any big box church doing a Sunday morning presentation with the big screen behind him, and the similarities were absolutely stunning to me. What are your thoughts there?
I think that's exactly right. And I think what you're seeing there is that in America, we have this desire to somehow walk in somebody else's footsteps and be as cool as they are, or as solid as they are, or as with it as they are. Long time ago, and I think I repeated this in Pop Goes Religion in my book, it's really important to realize that when people go to the shopping mall, they're a part of a system that I consider literally to be sacramental. And it starts with our ads. Our ads today no longer attempt to convince you that the following is a good buy or that's a good product. Most advertising in America today essentially says, don't you want to be the person that's in this image? You know, and then it becomes, consume this product, and you will be transformed into the person you saw in that ad, that you saw in that on that screen. And that's literally a sacramental system. I mean, you consume the product, you become the new person. Jobs was an absolute positive master of that. And I think it's a kind of a tragic commentary on religion in our age that many, many a megachurch is essentially doing the same thing with its pastor.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
You betcha. Glad to be here.
When we come back, Gretchen Pasentino is going to join us. Harold Camping made a prediction a long time ago. It didn't come true. The world didn't end. Then he tried again in the spring, saying it would happen in May. Didn't happen then, obviously. Now he's shooting for October, about a week away. We'll talk about his end times teachings with Gretchen Pasentino after this. Just in time for Reformation Day, Concordia Publishing House has a new graphic novel titled Luther, Echoes of the Hammer. This Luther biography is written and illustrated in a fun, comfortable format. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase Luther, Echoes of the Hammer by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. This new Reformation resource costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther, Echoes of the Hammer, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October.
How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Euthanasia in Belgium shows the rift between theory and reality.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The nation of Belgium legalized euthanasia several years ago. Today, euthanasia accounts for 2% of deaths there. Though the practice is governed by strict rules, researchers have found significant discrepancies between law and reality. More than 100 nurses have admitted to ending the life of a patient without that patient's consent. Legally, only doctors can end a patient's life, and only by request. According to the Canadian Medical Association, which published the report, nurses are clearly operating beyond the legal margins of the profession.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.